At one point when I was a teenager, we were homeless for a little while. And that's something that just kind of sticks with you when you're a kid. And I promised myself that I would never be in that position again. And I'd make sure that I never put my future family in that position. But that didn't really change anything. I still sucked with money.
What is up, my fellow side hustlers? This is your friend and host, Ryan Helms. I want to welcome you to the Hustle to Freedom podcast. I'm part of a small minority that are taking action because we just aren't satisfied with waking up, going to a 9-to-5 job, then coming home only to repeat it again the next day and never make any real progress in life. We're here to create our own path, our own happiness, our own freedom. Busy lives with limited resources mean we can't just throw stuff against the wall and hope that something sticks. We have to play smart and use only today's best strategies and most efficient tools. We aren't going to sit back and hope for a 3% raise each year. We are building additional income sources that will allow us to create the life we want. We call ourselves Freedom Chasers. And this podcast highlights the journey of these everyday people who are creating extraordinary side hustles. Welcome to the Hustle to Freedom podcast. If you are enjoying these episodes, listen until the end or check out the show notes to hear 4 ways in which you can support this podcast to keep it ad-free. In this episode, I'm chatting with Ansley Fender to hear how she is using her personal finance blog, Financial Literacy School, to get her name out there and grow her service business, which helps people create roadmaps for financial independence. So, let's not waste any more time and dive into this conversation with Ansley now.
My name is Ansley, and I'm a personal finance coach. And I got started because no one taught me how to manage my money as a kid. And my parents were atrocious with money. And it sort of got worse as I got older. And at one point when I was a teenager, we were homeless for a little while. And that's something that just kind of sticks with you when you're a kid. And, you know, it's funny to this day, I have no idea how long we were actually homeless. I've just sort of forgotten most of the situation that led to it and whatnot. But, you know, I was a kid and it really just stuck with me. And I promised myself that I would never be in that position again. And I'd make sure that I never put my future family in that position. But you know, that didn't really change anything. I still sucked with money. So, when I was in college and out on my own, every dollar that came in was a dollar that went out. And, you know, I was quickly sort of creating an environment that would put me right back there. And, I got married actually in college and, decided, you know, we need to figure this out. We're adults now. And as terrifying as that is, we should start acting like it. And my husband had a Dave Ramsey book for some reason and, you know, a stack of books somewhere. And that sort of got my interest in personal finance started. And from there, I just sort of read everything I could get my hands on. And I started experimenting with my own finances. And through that have sort of found little tricks that work really well because they counteract basic human psychology, which is typically totally opposed to good financial management. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sort of figured out these financial hacks that seem to work really well for a lot of different people. And, you know, sort of as I started into the work world and things, I realized I was not alone in this sort of, you know, gray area of personal finance where I just, you know, no one knew what was going on with their money. They couldn't tell you what they're spending their money on. They couldn't even tell you how much their electric bill was last month. And I realized that the problem was that people were just sort of burying their heads in the sand and they needed someone to say, you know what, it's okay. Let's take a look at this together and let's come up with a plan. Because, you know, what you measure, you focus on. Mm-hmm. So that sort of birthed the whole financial literacy school coaching. And that's sort of how I came to be.
Now that's, I can relate with pretty much everything you said there. I was one of those people where, you know, I don't think my parents were the best with money either. Thankfully, we never got in a situation like you said, it, being homeless and things like that. That's unfortunate. And I can definitely see how that would stick with you forever. I guess at this point, I don't think you're going to forget it. So thankfully, I didn't have to experience that. But, you know, I don't think I just received a lot of financial education, not only from my parents, but from our traditional education system as well. So right. Completely in line with that. And like you, it led to me with excessive debt coming out of school and entering the workforce. I mean, you know, it's been quite the journey for me after college and beginning work. And I was one of those people who had my head buried down in the sand as well. And I don't think I just wanted to wake up and see what was actually in front of me until about 2 years ago.
Yeah, I remember the first time I added up my student loan debt and, you know, personal debt and things, and realized that's 3 years of my household income. I mean, if I gave every single penny to my debtors, or my creditors actually, then I wouldn't make a penny for 3 years. That's incredible. I mean, where do you begin? I mean, that's like the start of depression right there. Yeah. You know, and it feels like you're stuck in this hole and you're totally alone and you're having to dig yourself out, when in actuality, 80% of Americans are in debt. The average credit card balance is over $6,000. You know, mm-hmm. people are walking out of school with $20,000, $30,000 of student loan debt if they're lucky. And it's just one of these things where, you know, people start saying, oh, well, that's good debt. Like, what is good debt? You know, is that the debt I don't have to pay back? Because that sounds like great debt, but I have yet to find that. Yeah. So it really just becomes a management sort of situation where you just have to figure out how to deal with it. And you really have to deal with it, because unfortunately, it is just not going to go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy how much of a problem this is, and how, especially I think when people are in college, they don't realize really what they're doing. It's almost like they don't think that this will ever come back around and you'll actually have to pay it back. I don't think you really have that epiphany until that grace period ends. What is it, 6 months after you get out of school?
Yeah.
So it's a huge problem. So, you know, what's your mission with the financial literacy school?
So the mission really is to just manage people's finances in a way that prioritizes what they care about. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, a lot of personal finance methods talk about just cutting your expenses, cut, cut, cut. At some point, there is nothing below ramen noodles and having 6 roommates. And that sucks. You know, I want to go out and have a drink with friends, or, you know, I have kids, so I want to have a zoo membership because my daughter loves the zoo and it's super important to her. And she learns so much every time we're there, and we have a great time as a family. And that's really important to me. It does not matter that it's expensive. It's something that I really value. And what I find is that, you know, creating some boilerplate budget that has you living off of beans and rice, no one sticks to that. At some point, their, you know, higher level needs sort of take over and they're just frustrated and they throw in the towel. And I think that's where a lot of people are. You know, they've tried budgeting at some point and they hate it. And so what I do is I sit down with prospective clients and say, you know, what is it that you value? If what you value is craft beer, great. We're going to find a way to make sure that you can have all the craft beer that you can afford. Or, you know, if organic food, or going to lots of theme parks, or, you know, whatever, everyone values something totally different. Let's find a way to prioritize that. Obviously, your bills have to get paid. But once those are paid, the money left over, a chunk of that should go to what you care about. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there might be places along the way to cut some of your expenses, you know, if you have magazine subscriptions that you never read or, you know, whatever. But you have to live your life, you know, and that's, you have to enjoy it. Because if you don't, then what the heck is the point of paying off your debt or even caring if you're in debt? If your life sucks, you know, it's not like you're, you know, working toward anything if you're just angry all the time. So, you know, I really want people to grow and to achieve their dreams. And to do that, you have to be financially stable, preferably with no debt and with growing assets that allow you to not only do what you want to do now, but, you know, have a retirement that you're going to love. So that is really what's most important to me from sort of a budgeting and debt repayment aspect.
No, that's super cool, super ambitious, because, you know, it speaks to me 100%. Like I said earlier, like I love this stuff. I eat and breathe it. There's such a sense of relief when you know that you don't have any debt and that your decisions are no longer driven by, you know, ensuring you get that paycheck that comes in, you know, every single month and that you need it to live. It's so liberating to know that you don't have that hanging over you. You can start to do things, maybe look for jobs that maybe you wouldn't have looked at before, because, hey, maybe your dream job takes a little bit of pay cut or something. Having the ability to make those type of decisions can be truly liberating.
Yeah, and that really sort of gets into the financial independence, retire early movement. And that, you know, a lot of people have a lot of opinions that are maybe against early retirement or whatever. I think it's sort of something that's only for those people. But the thing is that when you've achieved financial independence, you decide what every day looks like for you. If you don't want to work, fine, don't. If you want to work at, you know, some teeny tiny nonprofit that can only afford to pay you $10,000 a year, have a great time. If you still want to be the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, great. You know, your time is completely your own, and time is the asset that no one can make more of, and the one that everyone wants an infinite amount of. So, you know, money is just a means to an end. It really is not the end goal, and it's not something to really focus that heavily on. You should be focusing on what it is that you want to do when money's no object. And that's, I think that's super important, because, you know, I love my job. You know, I own two businesses and I do what I want with my day every day. But, you know, if I didn't have some sort of income independence, that wouldn't be possible. And I might be stuck working at a 9-to-5 job that I absolutely hated, dreading every single day. And no one should have to live like that.
So how do you define financial independence?
For me, it's the point where you no longer have to work. So the dividend income that you're receiving from your investments, or, you know, royalties on something, whatever that looks like for you, when that equals your expenses and discretionary spending that you need every month, you are financially independent. So that looks different for everyone. You know, if you spend $40,000 a year, then your passive income needs to equal $40,000 a year. And once you've hit that, that's pure gold, in my opinion.
So this could be like, you know, for someone that has like a 401k or something at work, this could be the investments for whatever their 401k portfolio is. You could be making, you know, dividend payments and interest off of whatever money you've accumulated in there, and potentially that and other investments could create this passive income to live off of.
Yeah, absolutely. There's this thing called the 4% rule, and it's been figured out by people much smarter than myself. But basically, the safe withdrawal rate from your portfolio is 4%, and at that rate, you should never outlive your investment. So on years that the market's down, you might dip into principal a little bit, but on years that it's doing really well, you'll make up some of that loss. So the way to figure out how much you would need is you add up the money you need every year and you multiply by 25. And that is, in theory, your financial independence number. When you've hit that number, you can stop working that day. And, you know, if $40,000 are your yearly expenses, then you can expect $40,000 every single year. And you should never outlive your money. Obviously, that doesn't take into account things like inflation or, you know, some massive market crash or something like that. But, you know, it is just a theory. But but it has stood pretty strong for decades. So it is a pretty good gauge of what you'll need.
Yeah. And, you know, it seems kind of, like you said, theoretical and kind of abstract, but there's so many examples out there of people that have done this or are doing it now. So I don't think it's as far fetched as some people may sound who are maybe earlier in life. So I'll say like the 25 to 35 age range. And I think you really have a shot of achieving this. If you've got a decent job, you've got your finances under control, you're not blowing your money like I was 5 years ago, I think you can really set yourself up for living or potentially achieving this type of lifestyle. So don't think it's too far-fetched. And, you know, definitely research on the 4% rule, because it's pretty interesting when you see some of the simulations and the different like models that run to show you, you know, if you invested, if you were living off this much money and the market did this, this is how long your money would last. It's pretty cool to play with those different simulators.
Yeah. And the key really is the earlier you start, the better. If the second you start earning your first dime, you start investing, you are money ahead, literally and figuratively. If you wait until you're 30, you have lost 10 or 15 years of gains. And I mean, that's basically free money that the market is giving you just for investing your money.
Yep.
Why? I mean, when you think about it that way, why would you say no to that? You know, I mean, you don't have to do anything. You can just put it in an index fund, which is what Warren Buffett does, and leave it and not think about it ever again. You know, I mean, I guess you can have someone manage it if you want, or trade or whatever, but typically that doesn't actually get you much further ahead statistically. So, I mean, if you can just set it and forget it, in 20, 30 years, you might be extremely surprised how much money you have.
Yeah, for sure. So how do you think side hustles play into this? Like where do you stand at on that? Like people pursuing other things outside of their day-to-day job to help fund what their life, pay off their debt, whatever it be. What do you think about that?
I think they accomplish two goals. One, I think it's job security. You know, in a world that's changing as fast as ours, it's at least plausible that someone's going to come along and develop a robot that's going to do your job and do it inexpensively. So, you know, if you have other things going on that you can just very easily pivot into, you're never going to be left wanting for work. So from a practical perspective, it's invaluable. But from an income perspective, the more it's sort of like the idea of diversifying your portfolio. The more you diversify your income streams, the more cushioned you are from any sort of changes. If there's a market downturn and there are a bunch of layoffs, you have other money. It's great for saving and investing if you have an employer who offers a 401k or something and you're taking advantage of that. And then you have, you know, a couple hundred to a couple thousand dollars coming in a month from some side hustle or something. I mean, who doesn't want an extra couple thousand bucks a month? And a lot of people have figured out ways for their side hustle to be totally passive, whether that's through, you know, video courses that they spend a lot of time on at the beginning, but then just sit back and let run, or if that's affiliate marketing or, you know, whatever. Blogs can make a decent chunk of money, way more than a lot of people would think. You know, it's a lot of work up front, but then once you sort of become an influencer and things like that, the money's not bad. So, you know, it's like I said earlier, it's not all about the money, but it is all about making money in like without spending a ton of time. Yep. So if you can decrease your input and increase your output, then that's fantastic. If I can work 10 hours a week and make money like I'm working 1,000 hours a week, that's the ultimate goal.
Yeah, for sure. So when did you decide to, or were you working a standard 9-to-5 type job before you went off into your two businesses?
Yeah, I was actually working a full-time job and 3 part-time jobs.
Oh, wow.
I've always been a hustler, always. And I like money. I like making money. I like having money. I hate not having money. So I was trying to pay off my debt as quickly as possible. It was really the bottom line. And I will admit, I took it too far. I was delivering newspapers at 3 o'clock every morning. And then I'd come home and get my daughter ready to go to daycare. And then I'd go to work. And then I'd come home from work. And then I had some writing writing gigs that I was doing and some bookkeeping I was doing. And it was just like, this 15, 20 hour a day work day is for the birds. And, you know, it just, you can't sustain yourself that way very long. You will eventually just burn out. So yeah, and I didn't really like my full-time job either. And I decided, you know, I need to do something that fulfills me in some way, but also is useful and makes good money. Yeah. And so that's really sort of what I got into. And the other issue was at the time when this whole idea sort of started, I was working for a bank as a bank teller. And I think Chase has proven that bank tellers can easily be replaced with, you know, sort of automated machines. And I was working as a bank teller when all this was happening. And it was like, oh, well, you know, that's great. I'm going to be out of a job here pretty soon. So I wanted to find something that was, that I didn't think could be replaced. And, you know, I think when it comes to managing your money on a personal level, that's very custom tailored to you. There's no way that just a piece of software or something can handle that. So that was really another benefit of the side hustle that I was already pursuing.
So how are you finding clients for this? So you decided to go out and do this on your own with both the blog and your personal finance coaching business. I guess that's maybe you would describe it better than me. Sorry if I butchered what you would call it. But,
no, not at all.
You know, how are you going out in finding new prospective clients?
So one of the big hurdles is trust, because, you know, it's obviously personal financial information, and it's sharing that with someone that you don't know on a personal level. So convincing people to do that and to give you all the information you need is really difficult. So, you know, I sort of have adopted the slow burn method. You know, the scaling it has been difficult because of that. And you have to build a certain amount of rapport and things. But one resource that has actually helped me tremendously, and this is what I use with all of my clients, and I don't know how I would do what I do without them, is Tiller Money. If you haven't heard of them, they basically developed this, I don't even know what you call it. It's not really software, but basically this system that automatically syncs your bank data into a Google Sheet, which, I mean, why had no one done that before? I mean, that's brilliant.
How do you spell that?
T-I-L-L-E-R.
Tiller. Okay.
Yeah. They actually, I think they won a FinTech award this year and maybe last year as well. So, I mean, they're doing big things, but they, so they offered this service, and they also have templates that they create, like budgeting templates, debt repayment templates, things like that. And the templates are great, but the real like benefit to what I'm doing was just that syncing of bank information, because a Google Sheet is 100% shareable. So, you know, I just have my clients basically share the sheet with me. I cannot see any of their bank information. I know what bank they use and the last four digits of their account number, but that's it. And all I see is where they spent money, which, you know, I mean, it's personal information, but it's not really like privileged information necessarily. And it's worked wonders. It's sort of gotten rid of the privacy issue, and they're in complete control. They can revoke access to the Google Sheet at any time. So it really has sort of gotten rid of that piece, which is definitely real. You know, people have to be able to trust the person looking at their money. So that has been super helpful. And if anyone from Tiller hears this, thank you for your product. But yeah, so that's really sort of how it works. And that was the big obstacle. But man, they fixed that one for me.
No, that sounds pretty cool. I have to check that out. I'm right now I use like a mixture of Mint, Personal Capital, and a Google Sheet. So maybe that would be my solution.
Yeah, I was sort of doing the same thing. And I had made my own templates in Google Sheets. But the problem was, is that, you know, a lot of those apps are so one-dimensional, and they sort of lock you into what their idea of a good budget is. And it's not, you know, Personal Capital really hits on people that are trying to grow assets, and Mint sort of hits on the people that are just trying to, you know, do simple budgeting and things like that. But they're like, I want my own categories that are unique to me and my life and my situation. And that's, a spreadsheet is perfect for that. But, you know, for the people that don't know how to, you know, write their own spreadsheet or anything, they need some sort of template that they can just plug their numbers into and use.
Yeah, for sure. So what do you think are, what are like the top three things that 3, 4, 5, 9, however many you have, like what are the top things that you think people can do to get out of debt faster? Like what are some strategies for people to attain this kind of debt-free lifestyle?
So I think the first one is just take stock of the situation and just do it. It's like ripping off a Band-Aid. It's not going to be pretty. I worked with a client one time who he thought his debt was, you know, one number. And once I added it all up, it was double what he thought. Like that's terrifying when, you know, when you let it go so far that you don't even know where you stand. So just figure out where you stand, first of all. And then you have to create a budget. If you don't know where your money's going, you don't know how much you can put towards your debt. So, you know, take stock of both of those things. What are you spending money on? And who and how much do you owe? At that point, it's really just sort of basic microeconomics. A dollar spent one place can't be spent somewhere else. So allocate your dollars to different things, you know, figure out what you have to pay for, which is your debt and your bills, and then figure out what you can afford. And, you know, the Dave Ramsey camp is sort of, you know, throw everything at your debt. I'm all for that. It's not going to be pretty and it's not going to be fun, but it'll get the job done very quickly. Relative to, you know, sort of doing it as you have money or whatnot. But then I think the most important component after that is automate everything. Humans are terrible at making decisions.
What do you mean by automate everything?
So automate your savings, automate your debt payments. What I have all of my clients do is set up two checking accounts. You have a checking account for spending. You have a checking account for paying your bills. I don't want you to ever look at your checking account and think, oh, look at all this money I have to spend, because that's not an accurate picture. You know, your bills have to be paid and you have to make at least the minimums on your debt. So if the pool of money you have to spend looks smaller, you will spend less. So trick your brain. And, you know, like I said, humans are really bad at decision making. Decision fatigue is a real thing. The more decisions you make in a day, the worse you get at it. So minimize the number of decisions you have to make in the financial realm. So, you know, have money automatically going to a savings account. If at all possible, have it bypass your checking account completely, so you never have an opportunity to spend it. Hmm. If you have a student loan payment it has to be $120 a month, but you want to put $300 a month, have that $300 a month payment come out of your account automatically. Because, you know, if you go to pay it and you have the choice of, well, I really want to put $300 toward it, but, you know, my friend's birthday is coming up and I'd really like to, you know, take her out or whatever, just you don't want that dilemma. Just pay the $300. Like, just do it and set it up that way so that it's never an issue. And I really think automating things is the quickest way to get it done. Mm-hmm. Because it's gonna run regardless of the type of day you're having. If, you know, you're sort of recovering from emotional shopping, your automation's going to make sure that you don't do anything stupid. So yeah, I really think that after you've taken stock of everything, that is the single most important component.
What type of debt would someone want to attack first?
I think that really depends on your motivations. So the two most quoted debt repayment methods are the snowball method and the avalanche method. The snowball method is this idea of building momentum over time. So you order all of your debts from smallest to largest, and you go crazy on the smallest one. You know, you have to make sure you pay the minimums on everything to, you know, keep the debts in good standing. But then you attack the smallest one because you build up easy wins. You know, if your smallest debt is $100 medical bill, just get rid of that. It's going to feel really good. It's a, you know, one fewer person you got to pay every month. And then you go to the next biggest one. And you keep doing that with the idea that once you get to your bigger debts, you'll have built up a habit of paying off debt to the point where it's not going to be so daunting. And that does work really well. In fact, I think that's probably one of the best methods. The avalanche method, I really like from just a numbers perspective, because it will save you the most in interest payments over time, but it's not particularly friendly if you're not intrinsically motivated to pay off your debt. So the way it works is you start with the debt with the highest interest rate. So if you've got a credit card sitting at the legal limit of 29.99%, which is absolutely unreal, you really want to pay that off as quickly as possible, because 30% per year is absolutely insane. But if your credit card debt is $10,000, it is going to feel like that $10,000 is a huge mountain. And, you know, I mean, the overall interest savings may not be a big enough motivator to keep you going. So it's really one of those things you have to weigh. If the numbers really are that important to you and you're just so motivated it doesn't matter, then the avalanche method might work really well. But if you're struggling, if you've tried to pay off your debt a couple times and you always just end up giving up or whatever, the avalanche method works really well. But I have heard recently of a third method that I love, and I read it on a blog by a personal finance blogger. He writes on Campfire Finance, and his method is go after whichever debt you hate the most. So if you have a medical bill from getting a tattoo removed and that tattoo happened to be your ex-boyfriend's last name or, you know, whatever, or, you know, you have a loan or a credit card debt for a trip with someone that you had a falling out with or whatever, that emotional connection to your debt has an effect on you. So, you know, take advantage of that and use all of that anger or whatever and pay it off, because constantly seeing that number is not going to help you get over that event or experience. So, you know, just pay it off, forget about it, and now you're done. And I really like that one just because it's kind of funny. But it also, I think the key to personal finance and doing personal finance really well is understanding psychology, and not just general human psychology, but your own personal psychology. And that one tends to just sort of play to your own basic human instinct to remove yourself from a situation you don't like. And yeah, I think it's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, it's basic, but it's interesting, an interesting concept to kind of, which one do you hate the most and go after that one. Let some anger help you out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. So what about like some resources? So say someone out there, they've got a side hustle, they've got some extra money coming in, like what are some resources that they could start to educate themselves more on, you know, just better financial literacy and understanding what these different things that you're talking about, the 4% rule, you know, basic things like compounding interest, like what are some good just general finance resources out on the internet that you would recommend?
That's hard actually, because you know, when the other business I own is a bookkeeping business. So, you know, I not only do personal finance, but I do finance for businesses and small and nonprofits. My goodness, words are hard. But yeah, it's one of those things where there aren't a lot of resources that sort of put all the information together. So if you have a side hustle, first of all, you need to figure out if the money is just going to go to you personally, if you're going to set it up as a business, what that's going to look like. Because, you know, just from a tax perspective, you need to make sure you're, you know, sticking to the letter of the law, or that nice pile of money that you've brought in at some point, you know, the IRS might come asking for their chunk of it. So I'm actually working on a course about financial management for side hustlers for that very reason, because it's just sort of spread all over the internet. And unless you want to, you know, have a lovely evening with the IRS's website, it's going to be difficult to find all the information you need. And, you know, even beyond that, things like if you do set it up as a business and you're self-employed and you move into that full time, there are different ways that you can save for retirement that are tax deferred, that are specifically for small business owners and are very much to your advantage from a tax perspective. So yeah, unfortunately, I don't know of any specific resources that really help with that. And that's unfortunate, especially since side hustles have become so popular. But I think that's probably why there aren't a lot, you know, because it's one of these things that's growing so quickly and the education part of it is trying to catch up.
Yeah. What's just in a general sense, what are some of the either personalities or content producers that you keep up with in the financial space?
So a really good one is Rockstar Finance. It's basically they curate articles from the entire personal finance blogosphere. And it's really sort of the best of the best. It's really hard to get an article published on their site, or they have a daily newsletter. And I mean, it's a big deal. I mean, if you follow personal finance bloggers on Twitter, it's like when they get featured on Rockstar Finance, they are shouting it across social media. It's a really big deal. It's super cool. But there's another one that's up and coming called Campfire Finance, and Fire for Financial Independence, Retire Early. And it's sort of along the same idea, curates articles from different blogs and things. But I like to start with places or with blogs like that, because you sort of get a good mix of everything, and they're really good about playing devil's or finding articles that play devil's advocate. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of people are like, ooh, early retirement is great. And then you have these other people who are like, I'm all for financial independence. I am absolutely 100% opposed to retiring early for myself personally. And this is why. Or, you know, why I decided to save money before paying off my debt, and then the opposite side of that. So I think, you know, you can read 50 blogs a day, but most people don't have time for that. So I think those two resources are really good from a personal finance perspective, and just sort of getting really well curated, well written, you know, and just well researched articles from people who have lived what they're writing.
Mm-hmm. No, that's awesome. I've been on the Rockstar Finance blog before. I'll have to check it out in a bit more detail. And the other one, I'll be sure to link it up in both of these in the show notes. But the other one was called Campfire Finance.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll link both of these up in the show notes. So if anybody wants to check them out, you can just scroll down and you'll see the links. But I'm going to go check out Campfire Finance tonight, get some education for myself. So looking forward to that. Cool. So where do you see your two businesses 1 year from now?
Oh, wow. Well, I hope doing fantastic. 300% growth. No, yeah, I mean, I'm really enjoying what I'm doing. And that for me, that's a first in my professional life. So, you know, profit is definitely a driving factor, but I really just like sort of building relationships with people and finding out where they are financially and things like that. So ideally, I'm just doing that with more people. And, you know, if that does turn into a client relationship or, you know, a subscriber to my coaching, that's fantastic. But I also am trying to create sort of either through like a Facebook group or a Slack channel or something, a way for people to just ask personal finance questions and sort of get group feedback. You know, I would obviously answer from a sort of coaching teaching perspective, but also what works for other people just like you, and really sort of getting that social aspect of it, I think is really helpful, because, you know, with things like Fitbit and the sort of social fitness movement, we've seen how that's been helpful, you know, that these fitness challenges and things have done wonders for some people. So why not adopt that with personal finances? And sort of, we're all in the same boat, or at least 80% of us are in debt. So we are, you know, very similar and are dealing with similar issues. So it's helpful to realize that you're not alone, and that people have the same sort of gaps in their understanding, thanks to, you know, not being taught as a kid, you know, at home, and then, you know, just not being taught at school or in college or anything like that.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, I forgot to ask when you were talking about the main job and all the side hustles you had going on, like how much debt did you guys knock out?
Surprisingly little, because the problem was I was so tired that money saving measures like cooking at home and things like that sort of went out the window.
Yeah.
And apparently there is a point where you hit diminishing returns, and, you know, it just doesn't work. You know, everything takes balance. And I think we actually paid off less during that period of time than we had in other times, because I was just so unhappy. You know, retail therapy became a very real thing for me, which is, you know, obviously not at all what I wanted. Mm-hmm. But yeah, That was actually very eye-opening. So, you know, trying to work a whole bunch of jobs to pay off debt doesn't seem to, or at least for me, was a terrible strategy. It really does seem better to have a main job and a side hustle, because people seem to be able to manage that pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, but it's still about, even if it is, you just have a single side hustle, it's about keeping it sustainable, right? You don't, right. Like I tell people all the time, I mean, I can't tell you the last time I was on my computer past 10 p.m. Like I don't do it. I go to bed. I like sleep. I understand how important sleep is to the body and how it functions. So I make sure I get sleep. I'm normally off the computer by 9:30. So that means that we have 12 minutes to wrap up this conversation. No, but seriously, that's something that I stick to. I don't stay up late. I don't, you know, burn the candle at both ends. You know, I know that I want to be doing this a long time. So I'm playing the long game. And I think that's important. And, you know, you don't want to end up in a position where, you know, like you said, you were doing a lot, but you weren't making a lot of the progress that you wanted because you were probably doing too much.
Right. Yeah. And okay, so great. You retire at 30 years old. You are, you know, extremely out of shape. Your heart is in serious danger because of the amount of stress that you've put it under. You know, what is that worth it? You know, you could have taken a few more years and gotten to the finish line with your health intact and your relationships intact and things like that. So I really, like I said, I think there's a balance to everything, especially in your personal finances. And the goal is not to become Warren Buffett. The goal is to meet your needs with minimum effort. So yeah, if you can accomplish that, then you're doing great.
Yeah, for sure. So where can people find out more about you, Ainsley, and what you're working on?
So my website, it's financialliteracyedu.com. Apparently someone took financial literacy school. So my website has the links to, you know, sign up for coaching, and I do free consultations and things like that. But it also has links to my blog. And then I'm hoping to release that bookkeeping for side hustlers course, I don't know, next few months.
Yep.
But I'm also potentially I'm super excited about this, doing some sort of collaboration with a financial tech startup company that would sort of incorporate coaching into their product. Which would be super cool, because there, to my knowledge, are no apps or tools out there for coaching that is for people who make normal amounts of money. You know, if you're a high net worth client, there are plenty of resources for you, but it's because of your net worth. So yeah, I'm super excited to see how that might come about and what that might lead to, because, you know, I think having coaching on a large scale for something this important could make a huge difference for a lot of people.
Yeah, I just heard an interview. Oh man, this was probably like last week or something, and I'm trying to actually find it right now. Let's see, what was the name of this app? I don't see it here now. It was a software app, and I was wondering if it was what you were referring to, because it was like this new startup and they had all this interesting stuff going on, and the guy was big in the financial independence community as well.
No, that's I haven't heard of that. No, this is an app for social share or social saving.
Mm-hmm.
Going along the same lines as what happened with social fitness and things like that, but really sort of targeting younger audiences who are just learning how to save and invest and things like that, and ways to save together. So saving up for a spring break trip with all your friends, or a bachelorette party, or something like that. With the idea that once you build that habit of saving and get a little money under your belt, then you can move over into the investing part. Because I mean, you can obviously invest with $50, but you'll see a lot better growth in terms of absolute numbers. I mean, you might see the same percentage, but in terms of absolute growth, if you have more money invested. So I think it's a good way to sort of get people's foot in the door with financial management.
No, that sounds pretty cool. And whenever and if that takes shape, just let me know, and I'll update the show notes. So when people come by and stumble across it, we can add it to the blog. on.
Awesome. Awesome.
Cool. Well, this has been fun. I enjoyed chatting with you, and I'm sitting here like talking to you and trying to find this link at the same time, and I don't get it. It's driving me crazy because I know it wasn't too long ago. But anyway, I'll share it with you so you can check it out. It was a pretty cool interview with this guy, and it was a pretty cool piece of software. So I'll be sure to share that with you. And thanks a ton, Ansley, for swinging by to tell us about what you're working on and give us a little education in the personal finance space.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
All right, talk soon.
All right.
And that's a wrap. I hope you all enjoyed that episode. Remember, you can find links to everything we discussed in the show notes below. And if you like this podcast and want me to keep bringing you great episodes each week, here are a few ways you can support the Hustle to Freedom podcast. First, take a screenshot of the podcast and send it to a friend who may like it. Second, I'm doing a drawing for a free copy of the Side Hustle Journal for every 5 iTunes reviews I receive. So, if you want a chance to win, leave a rating and review on iTunes or Apple Podcast and send me an email at hello@gritandhustle.co. Detailed instructions on how to do this are in the show notes below. Third, take your side hustle to the next level by implementing a sales funnel to turn your passive website visitors into paying customers with ClickFunnels, the number one sales funnel software in the world. You can get a free trial by going to gritandhustle.co/profit. And fourth, if you're interested in podcasting also, which is the fastest growing content medium in the world, head over to gritandhustle.co/podcastingmadeeasy to enroll in my course now. Until next time, keep hustling, my friends.